Welcome to this special coverage, Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Hosted by Todd Alba and Kristen Bry, live in Milwaukee on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
They are broadcasting from Whitetail in the Deer District across from Fiserv Forum, where the first Republican presidential primary debate is set to take place tonight. They'll be joined by a team of political experts. Learn why Wisconsin is ground zero for winning the election, what national Republican insiders reveal, and hear about the Democratic strategy for the Badger State in 2024.
Now, special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Here are your hosts, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
And thank you very much, Todd Michaels, and welcome back. We are live here at Whitetail, Milwaukee, the beautiful bar right across from the Deer District here and Fiserv Forum. We are under 1 hour away. Really, the start of the 2024 presidential race begins here, begins tonight in the Fiserv Forum behind us. It's going to end here in terms of the Republican nomination next summer when one of these people, or Donald Trump, Kristen Bry, is going to be nominated as a Republican. There will be eventually a Republican nominee. And this is the whole thing. This is the kicking off the whole season of politics in this country. It's happening less than 100 yards away.
And we're happy to be hosting it.
We're happy.
Well, some of us are happy to be hosting it. I would say we are happy to be hosting it.
Yes.
There is some people in the city of Milwaukee. Less happy.
Not so much. But we talked about this earlier on your show, as goes Wisconsin every day from 10 until noon, that even if you're not a Republican, if you're a Democrat and you're going to vote for Joe Biden or you don't want to vote for any of them, it's cool that it's here in Wisconsin and we get to talk about Milwaukee and we get to talk about the state of Wisconsin.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about Milwaukee is we are an underdog city. I think we felt that a lot, having gotten the chance to live here when the Bucks won the national championship and feeling that underdogness and how thirsty we are for national attention and respect, and especially on the heels of losing the DNC in 2020 because of COVID. And so I think there is, as much as it feels different because politics are not aligned, there is something as far as this city getting, you know, the respect that it wants as far as a major metropolitan area. And I think no matter what, this provides that.
You mentioned underdog, Milwaukee being sometimes called an underdog. Somebody who thought was an underdog, or people thought it was the Lincoln Project. A lot of people thought, what the heck is going on? They're not actually going to do anything. Rick Wilson was the founder. Trygve Olson is a senior advisor. You guys made a difference last time around. You're apt to do it again.
We did make a difference last time. We targeted 9 key states, and we moved the vote about 4%. And that made a difference for Joe Biden in a bunch of states. In 2022, we went after the election deniers, the crazies who were promising to undo the election, the secretaries of state, U.S. senators. We won 17 out of 22 targeted races. I'll take that batting average any day, anywhere, to any contest. And in 2024, we're positioning to defeat Donald Trump once again, and also to break the authoritarian movement and to break the extremism of MAGA while we're doing it, because it's a pernicious and dangerous movement in this country. It has already proven to be willing to use violence for political ends, and that's not America. And so we're going to be in the fight once again. We've got a team of incredibly smart people who do work at a level, you know, 20 of us do work at a level that a 200-person campaign staff would normally do, and we do the best ads, communication, and media in the business, and we are going to be out there swinging hard.
Trygve Olson, you grew up here in Wisconsin, in Northwest Wisconsin. You have been a Republican operative, not just in Wisconsin, but across the United States. You both have. You've been here in this situation, getting Republican presidential candidates ready tonight. What goes into this, again, for the people who might just be joining us this hour? What's going on 45 minutes out?
Well, I mean, you know, what you have to remember about presidential debates and the primaries is it's a game within the team. So, you know, I was saying this earlier, in 2008, when we were getting McCain ready, we were thinking about how to make life miserable for Rick, who was with a different candidate. And then try and figure out where we were going
to
go grab beers with Mike and Rick after the debate and laugh about it. But, I mean, that's what's going through their head. Usually it's like whack-a-mole, right? You're trying to whack who's ever up. But what you're seeing is, you know, Donald Trump is so far up and he's not playing. And Charles and I were talking about this offline. You know, for the Trump campaign, who's not here, their whole strategy is to keep a foot on Ron DeSantis and not let him break out. And right. so it's all about them knocking him off the game. But then again, DeSantis, and this is smart by the Trump campaign. They have real people running the campaign. They know it's hard for DeSantis to hit back when Donald Trump isn't here.
Professor Charles Franklin, head of the Marquette Law School poll, one of the most respected polls in the country. Do you see what Trigvi just said? In any of your data, in any of your polls, are you seeing this, that people are open to, you know, somehow knocking Trump down a couple of notches?
Yeah, but you got to put it in the perspective of it's a minority of the Republican Party, and somebody's got to be convinced to shift away from Donald Trump. There are people that say they like Donald Trump very much, we're talking Republicans here, but are nevertheless picking somebody else as their first choice. In both our state and national polls, Trump has got a 70% favorable rating among Republicans, but he's only getting 55% in the primary. That means there's a 15-point gap between favorable and vote. And then the 30% of Republicans that are unfavorable to Trump, virtually none of them are going for Trump, but they're scattered across all the other candidates right now. How do you put that 30%? Capture most, if not all, of that 15% slippage. And even then, you're still down 45 to 55 for Trump. So it's a very hard row to hoe. But that's really the way dissent within the party looks, not counting those former Republicans that have already left the party and just not are part of the game anymore.
So moving on to, you know, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. we know in 2016 there was a third party candidate, and that made a difference. And in other swing states, that could also make a difference. And there is a, I don't know how organized you want, it's all relative, but there are no labels is talking about running a third candidate. And so what does that look like as far as how many people, as we said before in the last segment, are not really thrilled about either candidate, whether it's a Donald Trump or a Joe Biden? Right. And is that a real move, like, could it really move the needle?
Yes. Remember, four of the last six presidential races in Wisconsin are all four of them decided by less than 25,000 votes. We saw third party candidates in 2016 getting far more than that. That doesn't mean they all would have voted for Hillary Clinton, but it was enough to matter. What's interesting is that when we saw this happen in 2000, when there was a big third party vote, and of course, George W. Bush won out, barely mm-hmm. out of that. And after 2016, is in the next election, we saw a huge drop-off in third-party voting. It was like people were reminded of why this matters so much. But now we're 8 years past 2016. Have people forgotten? Todd was mentioning young voters mm-hmm. who may have only hazy recollections of 2016 and yeah. no recollection at all of 2000. So I do think there's a real issue here of reluctant voters who, if you force them to choose, they would have a preference, but they may not feel like they're forced to choose. So that's one thing that I'll be looking for in the campaign, and how both sides, but especially Democrats, manage this issue of younger voters who think Joe Biden is older than rocks and, you know, and they feel a little hesitant about it. I do want to throw one little point
Please.
Out there. Among Democrats in our national polling, a little over 50% say they wish Biden wasn't running, at least as of a month ago. But 80% of Democrats have a favorable view of Joe Biden. That's 10 points higher than Republicans' favorables of Donald Trump. And that seems to me to be the thing to watch from now until November of 24. How does that play out, and does Biden sort of rise as that strength and favorability starts to overcome the reluctance of having him as the nominee if you're a younger person?
Rick Wilson, 2016, I was recovering Politico. Mm-hmm. I'd gone and had a coffee shop. Charles Franklin was a frequent customer. That's kind of how we met.
Okay.
He's a great coffee drinker. I had people come into my coffee shop on University Avenue in Madison, diehard progressive Democrats. They had laughed at me when I said a month out that Donald Trump could win. They came in the day after the election literally with tears in their eyes. I don't think Democrats should get too high on their horse. Trigvi said this before on our show before. Donald Trump can win this thing.
Donald Trump can win this thing. especially, by the way, if there is a third party. No Labels is talking about running Joe Manchin. The states they're on the ballot in so far and the states they're targeting to continue to get on the ballot in are states where Joe Biden barely won and where pulling conservative Democratic votes off of Joe Biden will give Donald Trump this election. No Labels elects Trump. I want people to remember that phrase. No Labels elects Trump. It will be Jill Stein on steroids. And Jill Stein is one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump in 2016. But Trump, because of the Electoral College structure and because of the way the country is politically oriented in that space, he has a meaningful chance of victory, which is why we get up every day and do what we do. Democrats should not take anything lightly, and they should not take the third party challenges lightly at all. And I do think, I'm going to say this, you know, I think the Biden campaign so far has taken No Labels way too lightly, because the woman who runs it, Nancy Jacobson, is a longtime Democratic fundraiser, but her husband, Mark Penn, is a guy who is a Fox News contributor, an advisor to Donald Trump during impeachment, and a guy who has gone so far into the Trump world that any rational person would understand what's happening here. They're funded by Republicans, they're operated by Republicans, and they're going to help a Republican.
And Mark Penn was Hillary Clinton's.
Right, until she fired him.
Until she fired him.
Right.
So Charles Franklin, you don't have a crystal ball. I know that. Not asking you to make it necessarily a big prediction. But what Rick just said, do your numbers show that Donald Trump does stand a chance? He certainly can win a general election.
I think that's certainly true. First of all, the state remains so evenly divided. We're within one point of Republicans and Democrats, 45-44, with Republicans having that one-point edge. Turnout, as always, can make a difference here. Mm-hmm. Any kind of lack of enthusiasm on either side that might push them to a third party vote can be a pretty important thing. I think the main point is to make that to voters is that your vote's consequential. It really does matter. Mm-hmm. Think about it long and hard.
Kristen on her show this morning, As Goes Wisconsin, had did some great research. Came up, I'm going to lighten this up just for a second. These nicknames and factoids that you didn't know about these candidates tonight. And Mike Pence, his nickname, Kristen?
His nickname growing up, his family called him Bubbles.
I did not
know
that.
Doesn't he just look like a Bubbles?
Does that make a difference? Does personalities in 20 seconds make a difference?
Having some personality makes a difference. I think maybe Bubbles would be a good move here.
Well, thank you, Charles Franklin. We appreciate you. Stick around. We've got Will Walter on the other side. The youth vote. Does it matter? Yes, it does. This is live coverage of the Republican presidential debate on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We now return to special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
Thank you very much, Todd Michaels. We are live here at Whitetail, Milwaukee. Kristen Bry, it's a great place to get a drink.
It is a great place to get a drink. It's also a great place to watch a game. We have many, many big TVs here. We have CNN, Fox, MSNBC. Is there another station we should have on right now?
Well, the Lincoln Project TV, I guess. But
Lincoln Project TV.
We're not live tonight. I'm here.
You're right.
I'm here with you guys. I'm not live tonight. Sorry.
Rick Wilson multitasking.
Yes, I am multitasking.
He's a multi-platform type of dude.
I
right?
was at that moment instructing the LP social media team to smite someone. So,
what does a smiting look like when it comes from Lincoln Project?
Generally, people seek witness protection program coverage immediately thereafter.
We want to thank Brady and Anya on our social media team tonight, doing a great job connecting us through a Lincoln Project. We appreciate all you guys getting the word out. We also have Trigvi Olson, senior advisor to Lincoln Project. Both Rick and Trigvi, former presidential campaign workers, operatives, strategists. The three of us, Rick, Trigvi, and myself, have all left the Republican Party. Our next guest, though, tonight, he had no worries at all. He was never part of the Republican Party.
No, far, no, I was not.
Far from it. We bring on tonight the co-host of Town Call, Will Walter, along with our friend Luke Mathers. Will, you have a great show midday, every day, Monday through Friday, 12:15 to 1. You tell folks that don't know about you what your role is in your life outside of Civic, and we want to talk to you a little bit about being the youngest person up here today, the youth vote.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I'm the policy research director and lead training organizer with our Wisconsin Revolution, as well as having served as a Sanders delegate to the 2020 convention, which was obviously here in Milwaukee. Unfortunately, it went virtual, but public safety is paramount. I'm not going to fault anybody for that decision, as sad as I am that it had to go down that way, especially because the Bucks were the one seed that year as well. Wisconsin would have been the epicenter of American culture for two or three weeks, not just politics. But we're getting our shot again now, so I guess it's better late than never.
You talk to so many people in your community organizing, and you and I have had discussions off the air before. You've heard most of the debate tonight. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat, we talked about this. Kamala Harris, the vice president, was in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. You have Brian Schimming, the chair of the state Republican Party, both going after the youth vote in Wisconsin, Will. As you're not quite Gen Z, just past that a little bit, but someone who is very in touch with the youth in Wisconsin, what do you think the number one, two issue are that's going to motivate them to the polls in 2024?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish I was Gen Z. I think Gen Z is what millennials are always accused of being when our parents, which in my case are the boomers, are talking about how these young kids and their avocado toast and their activism and stuff. Like, I wish millennials put in the time and effort that Gen Z does to structural change. But two issues really stand out more than any other. Abortion's the obvious one, and particularly in Wisconsin, gerrymandering. Obviously, that's not as applicable at the national level. But with I'll use the Janet Protasiewicz race as the example. Spring turnout amongst young people was insane, mm-hmm. record-shattering. Dane County was like 60% for an April election, which is absurd. If you look at the numbers across campuses throughout Wisconsin, young people came out in force for that race. And whenever I talk to a young person about why they came out in force, abortion and fair maps were the two things that were noted. Now, as we talked about earlier, Todd, Kristen, and I, that climate change is kind of I don't want to say the shadow issue in the sense that it's always looming behind the scenes, always on the back of young people's mind, because that's the world that they're going to live in.
It's on everybody's mind today.
I'm glad to hear that. This, right? Right? No, but 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, what's the world going to look like that we're going to be leaving to our children or our grandchildren? You know, is it selfish to what we're doing to them? We had that conversation a little bit earlier. That's something my friends and I talk about all the time. I'm not trying to be mean to them, but I'm like, brother, you think about maybe the long-term consequences. You could argue that my parents were selfish because the world that I'm going to see once I get to their age is not the same world that they were accustomed to. So young people don't get the credit for how intuitive I think they really are. A lot of times they're kind of blamed as, ignorant or lazy or entitled because they aren't able to get involved. But a lot of times they don't have the energy or the time to get involved if they're working 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week just to afford rent. They're never going to own a home, right? They're paying a quarter to half of their income in rent. They have living expenses that are only getting more and more expensive. These things matter to young people, and I'm so excited that Wisconsin in particular, because we led the nation in youth turnout for both the 2022 midterms and the April election, that young people in Wisconsin are really doing a good job getting to the polls, and I can't wait to see how they advance going forward.
One of the things that I think is interesting, in the attempt to try to talk about the other side, obviously, our Wisconsin Revolution, very left-leaning. One of the sponsors of this event is Young America's Foundation, which is a national organization that is trying to target conservative youth. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to find more information on what does conservative youth want. And what I found is one of the things that was not on the main stage at the most recent CPAC was a youth panel where they talked about climate change. And so I do think it's interesting to think about that there is more overlap potentially in the youth vote on issues with conservatives and the left when it comes to guns. Potentially, because it is a demographic and it is a generation that grew up. Even as a millennial, we did not have gun drills the same way that Gen mm-hmm. Z has grown up with. But also climate change is such a shift that is not getting any attention from their party.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting you would note that, because I did have a Washington Times piece up as well noting the American Conservation Coalition being one of the headline sponsors for the official party following Wednesday's debate in Milwaukee. So there are a number of conservative individuals who are recognizing if we want to win over this demographic, we have to do things that matter to them. We have to support policies that they believe in. It's not complicated. I used the analogy earlier with Kristen that it's very similar to me to when a company talks about how do we make our employees think that they're a family, right? We throw them a pizza party. Like, no, you treat them with dignity and respect. You pay them well. You do things that improve their life. Getting young people to vote is very, very similar. They want to be involved, and they will if you cater to their wishes.
Rick Trigvy, what the heck happened to our former party? Because tonight you're going to have a guy across the way here, Ramaswamy, who wants to raise the voting age to 25. That ain't a great message to young people.
Well, here's part of it. I was sitting here thinking as you were talking. You know, the Republicans have a...
Go ahead. We got 20 seconds. We'll come back and pick
Republicans,
it up.
Republicans have a less demographically diverse coalition in terms of age, and that matters a lot.
We'll come back and talk about more with that on the other side. You're listening to and watching continuing coverage of the pregame show, the Republican debate here in Milwaukee at Fiserv Forum. We're at Whitetail, Milwaukee. Don't go anywhere. Come on back on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We now return to special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
Thank you very much, Todd Michaels. We are live here at Whitetail, Milwaukee, across from the Deer District. Fiserv Forum in the background. You can see it if you're watching the stream via Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all those platforms. I refuse to call it X.
To call it X? Kristen are you Bry. On TikTok yet, Todd?
No, they want to call it TikTod. That's what they want to call it. You've been calling it TikTod, Will? All right, very good.
Well, it's Miller Park Amp Fam, too, right? Like,
right,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've been calling it Miller Park still, and it's been years. So, like, sorry, American family. But
we are about a half an hour away from the start of the Republican presidential debate. You can watch it on the Fox News and also streaming other places as well. We could not get the rights to it. They locked those up on the Republican side. I think Trivi Scott Walker has something to do with that. I'm not
probably.
Sure. Does it go back to Badger Boys State?
Maybe. I don't know why he wouldn't let us come to the Republican convention.
That's true.
But honestly, here's the thing. It's
what could go wrong with allowing me in a Republican convention?
Yeah. Or Todd. Like, Todd and I broadcasting from there. We make people feel guilty about the fact that they know a lot of
it. Let me set it up quick. We have Rick Wilson and Trigvy Olson from the Lincoln Project, Will Walter from Town Call, Kristen Bry from As Goes Wisconsin. We're a half hour away leading up to the Republican presidential debate. Before the break, gentlemen and lady, we were talking about the youth vote with Will. Trigvy, you were making a point here about what Republicans are just missing when it comes to capturing the youth vote.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing is that, and I think the youth need to be cognizant of this, right? As a girl dad myself, and I know Rick's a girl dad too, you know, guys like us, we all became Republicans back in the 80s because we didn't want government telling us what to do. And there's a slew of issues now where our colleague, Stuart Stevens, wrote a book called It's All a Lie, and it maybe was true, that Republicans wanted to control government so that government wouldn't be telling people what to do. And now what we have is, you know, government from the right telling people what to do. And nothing... And we found this with Lincoln Project Advertising, mm-hmm. and Rick did a great ad on Father's Day about it. Nothing moves dads faster, Dobbs dads, than their daughters basically right. saying to them, Dad, I'm afraid. I'm afraid the government's trying to tell me what to do. I'm afraid to send my kid or your grandkid or your kid to school because, you know, you've got they have to do shooter drills, active shooter drills. And, you know, youth having conversations with their parents, even if they're conservatives, about what they're fearing from the context of why are you letting government from the other side tell us what to do? I don't want that either.
Rick,
Trigvy's exactly right. And the point I want to make here is we have seen nothing comparable to Dobbs in terms of moving our target set of voters in the last 3-4 years we've been doing this. This is a huge wedge inside the Republican Party, in part because you combine two factors. One, the Dobbs dads who don't want government saying that your 10-year-old daughter who gets raped can't get treatment. They don't want women being told, oh, well, you can have an abortion in 6 weeks in Florida as long as you get two physicians to sign off and they can't be within 50 miles of each other. Mm-hmm. You know, all this stuff that they've set up as these structures, Dobbs blows everything else issue-wise out of the water so far. Gun control, climate change, it's all like down, you know, at the bottom third. Dobbs is up at a 9 or a 10. And it is the killer app. And it's not just about abortion or choice, qua abortion or choice. Mm. So you have to, some of that classical education Latin in there for you. But it is about freedom, decisions, individual liberty and responsibility, making your own choices in your life, not with the government. I mean, look, I was a Republican like everybody else in my world, but I started departing from the orthodoxy back in the mid-2000s because I said one day, I'm like, what business is it of the government to decide if my gay sister can get married or not? What business is that of the government? In what world does the government get a vote on that? Because really, they were just making an aesthetic choice that they didn't like lesbians or gays. They weren't making a choice that this is something that harms society or there was something broader. And so we really have reached an inflection point with the Republican Party where it has gone into this unlimited government application of power against anybody they don't like aesthetically or politically or socially. And I honestly, as a conservative, believe that that is anathema to the traditional sort of Burkean conservatism that I grew up with, because that was always, there was always this, the understanding or the belief that even government power applied as you like it stands the risk of expanding and ramifying and getting bigger and more intrusive and doing things you don't want. So that's where we are right now.
And it's so antithetical to conservatism. And honestly, like, I mean, I didn't, as somebody when I was your age growing up, I didn't like the fact that government was telling me I couldn't drink at 18. It's why I got involved in politics, Republican politics, because I thought when they changed the drinking age to 21. But, you know, I didn't want those on the left telling me I couldn't drink until I was 21. Maybe that sounds selfish when I'm here in the beer district. But but the reality is, I'm still pro-life, but I do not want – I think it's ridiculous in the state of Wisconsin that it would be 1848. We have that law applying that somebody like, you know, Scott Walker or a bunch of Republicans in the legislature who claim to be conservatives would be telling my daughters what they can and can't do. It just
– yeah.
Well, speaking as the one woman on the panel and also the only pregnant person on the panel, I should probably weigh in on this topic.
I think that might be wise.
And, you know, when Dobbs came down and – Wisconsin reverted to its 1849 abortion ban. Mm-hmm. What I said is they are not thinking about, as I said, as someone who is trying to get pregnant and has a want, is going to have a wanted pregnancy in the next year. What if I can't? Are they coming after IVF? Mm-hmm. What if I get pregnant?
They are.
And what if I do get pregnant and there's a complication? And if you don't think that by this time next year in 2024, that in this state and in multiple other states that have these strict abortion bans, that you're not going to have a friend who lost a wanted pregnancy and had serious medical complications or had to go through the traumatic experience of leaving the state to get a medical abortion for a child that they wanted, and how much that will swing votes. I have a friend I know that is a conservative who he and his wife had to go to Chicago at a 22-week wanted pregnancy.
I know someone in Florida who has had an incredibly difficult journey, and they are now going to basically say that if your IVF fails and you're killing the embryo, that you are a criminal.
Yeah. You also get multiple embryos as you're going through it.
Yes,
IVF.
But what they're doing, they're not gonna the illiberalism of the social conservatives is unbounded right now. And they believe that they have a singular moment. They're going to push as hard as they can. They think they've got a Supreme Court that'll back their play. And so in Florida, you're going to see very quickly next year, they're going to vote to repeal gay adoption. They're going to vote to repeal gay marriage. If Obergefell fails, they're going to restrict abortion further. They're going to regulate and limit doctors further. They're going to propose a state overseer of all gynecologists in the state to make sure they're not doing anything that would prevent a pregnancy. It's madness.
And don't forget that the lawsuit about mifepristone, the abortion pill, is also going to the Supreme Court.
That's correct.
But you know, it's another example of this. And Kristen, you'll experience this later. So when Uvalde happened, the next day I was dropping off my daughter who's in fourth grade at school. And after I dropped her off, I'm a gun guy. Actually, Rick and I are both gun guys. Yeah. And every time we bring up guns, then we have a million people who are like, oh, I got lots of guns. Well, Rick and I got lots of comps. Rick might even have more than me. But the reality is that here's the thing. As conservatives, if you're real conservative, why would you have a problem? If someone at 18 years old goes out and buys an AR in 6,000 rounds, there's nothing wrong with someone from government just coming and saying, hey, what's up?
Hey, what up,
when are you going to, when are you going to the range?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have no problem with that. But I really don't like the idea that I'm dropping, you know, Kai off at school. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, like, other parents dropped their kids off at school and never got to pick them up. And conservatives, yeah. It's just mean-spirited and not, it's not what conservatism is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Let's swing this ball back to you, Will. After hearing this discussion, is it going to be hard to get young people out to vote in 2024?
I don't think it's going to be hard. I think young people are energized. I think they're excited. I think what's interesting is we've kind of noted a lot of the hypocrisy of the party of small government using their power to change the world and assert their worldview. It kind of reminds me of, I believe it was a Barry Goldwater quote from the 70s where he said he was mostly afraid or more afraid of the religious zealots because they believe that they're working on behalf of a higher power. They can't be wrong. They can't be negotiated with. I think a lot of young people are seeing this from what they, particularly if they came from a conservative household. You know, I'm in the WOW counties, as we touched on earlier, Washington, Ozaukee, Waukesha. I'm in Washington County, so we're one of the most conservative in the state. I know a lot of people that are, you know, liberal or, let's say, middle-of-the-road individuals but have ultra-conservative parents. And the conversations that they have with their parents on some of these changing topics, abortion is still the big one because a lot of these young men, even in their 20s, have benefited from having legalized abortion before the Dobbs decision. And this not only matters to them as individuals, but when they're able to go home, as you noted with the Dobbs dad story, and tell their parents, Mom, Dad, I was in this situation. My longtime girlfriend and I were in this situation. We had complications or you know, we didn't think we were fiscally responsible enough at the time to give this child the life that they deserved. So we took this route. Now their parents are able to, it's no longer just a hypothetical. It's no longer something that they just hear or see on the news. This was, oh, geez, my child dealt with this. They personally experienced this. Now it matters. It has personal connection.
And Barry Goldwater may have been a prophet because there was a poll that came out this weekend. Trump voters trust Trump more than their friends, more than their family, and more than their clergy.
71%.
Yeah. It's a function of radicalization.
It's right.
It's a function of political extremism and radicalization. Rick and I have done a ton of work on this.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is you can use post 9/11. There was all kind. Now I know we're denying it, at least at the debate stage. But post 9/11, you know, there were things called the four psychological steps to extremism and the significant quest theory of radicalization. You know, you have 24% of the Republican Party that fits the definition of radicalization that was used, demonstrating need, network, and narrative. And that's why you saw what you saw on January 6th. I mean, Rick and I were on a chat on January 6th, and, you know, having worked around the world in places where
these were things we'd seen but not here.
And
couldn't,
you know,
imagine.
I texted Rick, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't see the other side of the Capitol, but they're going in, and they'll never hold it. And Rick's like, you're right.
Real quickly, Mr. Zahmer is back in the studio. Do we still have time to play Terry's clip, or are we too close at this point?
We do have time for that.
All right. Will Walter, thank you so much. We appreciate Town Call every day at 12:15 to 1. We're going to have a moment in political history. Here is Terry Bell.
You're listening to Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the GOP nomination begins here. I'm Terry Bell of Civic Media News. Today, we think of the Republican Party as America's conservative party. But in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the GOP was the nation's progressive party, and one of its most influential early leaders was Wisconsin's own Fighting Bob, Robert La Follette Sr. La Follette was born in Primrose. He studied law at the University of Wisconsin in Madison and became a lawyer. He entered politics in the late 19th century, serving as a Republican in various positions, including district attorney and U.S. representative. He supported issues such as labor rights, women's suffrage, direct primary elections, and the regulation of railroads and utilities. La Follette served as governor from 1901 to 1906. During that time, he put in place a series of progressive reforms, including greater government intervention to address social and economic problems, including initiatives like workers' compensation, primary elections, and regulatory commissions.
La Follette was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1906 and served until he died in 1925. He became a prominent national figure during his time in Washington. In 1924, La Follette ran as a third-party candidate in the presidential election representing the Progressive Party. Although he did not win, his campaign garnered significant support and helped keep progressive ideas alive in American politics. La Follette's advocacy for progressive reforms and his commitment to social justice laid the groundwork for future progressive movements, including the New Deal of the 1930s and subsequent social and economic reforms. You're listening to Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the GOP nomination begins here. I'm Terry Bell of Civic Media News.
We now return to special coverage of Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. Once again, Todd Alba and Kristen Bry.
And welcome back. We are live here at Whitetail Milwaukee across from Fiserv Forum, the Deer District, 10 minutes away now, watching the Fox News right now. We can see the hairspray and facelifts are out, and they're ready to go over there at Fox News as they're getting ready to bring everybody on. Kristen Bry is going to be a spectacle over there. We can't carry it because of preempted by other networks, of course. Rick Smith is coming up here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I bet you he's going to kind of be live tweeting and watching this as it happens.
Probably. I would imagine that, you know, having it both on the background and still talking in a monologue form takes a certain amount of skill. But I know I am very excited about tonight. I think from not even from the strategy point, but just looking at the entertainment value of it all and seeing who comes out swinging, who is a little bit of a puppy dog. But I think that we're going to see the gamut from everyone.
Rick Wilson, with all due respect, you're an old dog school political guy. You've been there. You've seen it all. Do these things put any sort of excitement in you, or is it just boring?
You know, look, I honestly believe in the debate process. I wish we were doing it in a way that wasn't contrived and fake because the real candidate isn't on the stage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, I am a big believer in politics. I do believe in contesting ideas and fighting it out on the stage and getting out there and presenting yourself, your personality, your policies to the American people. This one is a particular mutant parade of weirdos, skells, mooks, butt kissers, bootlicks, and a variety of people who I wouldn't let manage a Waffle House, much less be the president of the United States. But for all that, you know, look, I want America to see how fallen and corrupt today's Republican Party is, and tonight's going to be a great example of that.
Trigg, we don't have time to go into deep into it, but you're a guy who knows Eastern Europe and Russia. You've been banned by Russia from Putin himself. The news today out of Russia that the opposition leader, what looks like to be assassinated, to Rick's point, what we have over across the street in America today, better than over there.
No, well, here's the thing. What's important to understand is that in Putin's case, and I just got back from Eastern Europe, you know, Putin's betting on our dysfunction. He's going to continue doing what he's doing in Ukraine until our elections have passed because he thinks that can get him a better deal. And that the sad part about what we're going to see over there and what we're seeing with Trump is that we live in serious times, and we're being reminded of that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have an event over there that is not serious with people that aren't really talking about serious things. You can't say when you've had one of the candidates who's in second place denying at 9/11 that it's serious.
Professor Charles Franklin, I'm going to ask my other three panelists here in a second, predictions for tonight, what they think is going to come out of this, what they're looking for. You're not in the business of predictions, but statistics. What are you looking for? What do you see in terms of polling?
Yeah, I'll predict after next week, but not tonight.
But a smart man.
It's a trick of polling. But I actually want to follow on this point. We can listen for fireworks tonight, or we can listen for some policy ideas. There was a time when Republicans prided themselves as the party of ideas and policies and so on, and I'm not sure how much time that will get tonight. But I think it would be interesting to listen to the debate with half an ear for when policy issues come up, including how much do we help Ukraine versus how much do we pull back from that, to take a foreign policy issue, as well as the well-worn domestic policies as well. That may not be apparent at all. It's possible it'll come up quite a bit.
Quickly, do you see in your polling, is international issues like Ukraine, does this move people, or is it all focused on domestic?
Almost never. We do see a sharp divide in the Republican Party over Ukraine, with about half favoring more aid, but about half of Republicans opposed to more aid. It's much bigger support for Ukraine among Democrats and independents. So I don't think we can say that these issues are the things that move voters. Now, I'll grant you, our other two people here care about moving voters. But as an important, critical issue of national policy, it's something that deserves some conversation, even if it doesn't move voters.
Trigvi Olson, 1 minute. What are you looking for tonight? Any predictions?
I mean, what will I be looking for? You know, sitting where Rick and I sit, we'll be looking for things that demonstrate to Republicans and conservatives who are uneasy about the path of the Republican Party, cognitive dissidence that can be pointed out to them. And, you know, to Charles's point, Ukraine, it doesn't, where it matters is the cognitive dissidence of what the Republican Party and conservatism was versus what it is.
Rick Wilson, 1 minute. What do you expect? Any predictions?
I expect a lot of people running for vice president tonight. I expect no one to take a truly courageous moral stand and express the one thing that would make them distinguished candidates, which is to say, I will not vote for Donald Trump in the general election. I want to save America from him. None of them will do that. They're all too afraid of his base and of Trump himself.
Kristen Bry, you've been here all day. You've heard it all. You've been here a long time. You talk to people all over the state. Anything you're looking for, any predictions from you?
I'm not in the prediction business.
Okay.
But I will say, I would say as an American who also believes in the power of politics, I agree as far as I want to hear policy. As someone who has a show to do tomorrow, I want to see some one-liners. I want to see some clips I can pull, especially because we've got to turn around a show by 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Well, we haven't talked about it at all, but North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum apparently tore his Achilles heel.
But he's still going to be on the stage.
Is he going to be in an air cast, or are they going to wheel him out?
I don't know what the triage for that looks
like. Well, the Republicans probably took the ramps away, you know, because they don't believe in handicap accessibility. So I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see if he makes it there or not. This does not happen without a great crew. I want to say thank you to our CEO, Sage Weil, our president, Mike Crute, also Chris, Jane, Greg, Luke, Will, Aaron, Anya, Brady, Brian, Terry, Jorge. Am I missing anybody?
I think you did a pretty good job. We got Brian Kelly, Fancy Brian over there, but also a huge thank you to Whitetail Milwaukee, which is right on Old World 3rd Street. Please come down, have a drink here, watch a game here. It is a great establishment.
Corey and Drew, our engineers, as well. So this was an entire Civic Media production. We thank everybody. Rick Wilson, Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project. You guys are spectacular. We thank you so much. Professor Charles Franklin, Marquette Law School poll. When's the next one coming out?
Late September, early October.
So got to wait a little while. I think it'll be percolating. We might not have as many candidates by then.
I think there's an advantage to that. Give it a little time to percolate and see where we are, rather than immediately try to capture tonight's effects.
Before we came back on, Terry Bell had a little profile on fighting Bob La Follette, an iconic Republican.
Yes.
What we see across the street tonight, what we hear across the street, I don't think is going to be a lot of fighting Bob La Follette, but we'll see. The voters will decide. Civic Media will be here as well. Kristen Bry, fabulous as always. Great working with you, my friend.
Always great working with you, Todd.
And people can hear you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. As goes Wisconsin, bright night and bush and tailed.
And people hear you at 1 p.m., the Todd Alpa Show.
The appropriately named, I guess, right? Yeah. Jay and Matt there as well. For our entire, also Will, Walter, and Luke Mathers, town call from 12:15 until 1 for our entire Civic Media crew here. Stay tuned next. As we said, Rick Wilson. Wouldn't it be great if you and Rick Wilson and Rick Smith had a show together?
I love Rick Smith.
Yeah, we do, Rick.
I've done his show a lot. Yeah, have I love
really?
That guy.
Yeah. Well, we'll do a crossover with Lincoln Project.
The Rick Show.
All Rick.
Rick
all
squared.
All Rick all the time. Sunday. The kind of Ricks you want to see out here.
The Republican debate is on Fox News. Stay tuned to Civic Media for the Rick Smith Show. For all of us, I'm Todd Allbaugh, the Civic Media.